ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate it. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think that you are a hater. Coming up on this episode, man, why I don't really envy Kyler Murray. My further attempts to save the city of Atlanta from the destruction of New Orleans. But first... Man, I'm laughing already getting to this, man. Now, I feel like I need to start this with some level of preface just because I know how some of y'all act. And to be honest, you know, people I work for might listen to this thing. I don't really have any idea, but it's just a guess. Anyway, you know, it's been a real, like, stick to sports last year and change for people. We want to stay away from talking about politics as the politics of one of those things that, from what I can tell, tear us apart. So, you know, I just want to make sure everybody understands that that's not what's going on here. I don't have any intention to talk about anything that is all political. Rather than talk about something that be tearing us apart, I'm going to talk about something that bring us together, something that we all know something about, something we can all come together around. And you know what that is? Fast food. Fast food is something that we can all bond around. Like, there ain't that many things that you can necessarily make a reference to, and everybody knows what you're talking about. Like, everybody knows what you're talking about. But if I come out here and I say something about a quarter pounder, everybody knows what a quarter pounder is. Everybody knows about the Whopper. Everybody is up on game of the Frosty. And if the Clemson University football team was not already aware of these things, they became aware of these things yesterday because, see, they went to the White House. Hey, Gabe, you remember it wasn't that long ago. I guess it was more so with professional teams. But, you know, we always be like, is this team going to go to the White House? Are they going to go to the White House? Who's going to go to the White House? And start pointing in pictures and counting who came to the White House. Remember how we was doing that not too long ago?
Oh, I remember. I'm trying to think of who was the last team that actually went to the White House. Was it?
Probably wasn't the baseball team.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Yeah,
it's the Red Sox, right?
Yeah, the Eagles didn't go. Didn't the Patriots go?
I believe so.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, the Patriots went. But see, the thing about Clemson going that I found to be interesting was they got them up there fast, Gabe. Wasn't that game last week?
You know what? This is what's so funny about it is I saw a picture of like Trevor Lawrence posted a photo in front of the White House, and I was like, are they on there on like a field trip or something? Because they just won the chip. There's nowhere in hell they're going to visit the White House now.
Nah, dog, that game was a week ago, and they already got them up there. They was moving fast, except the problem with getting up there fast that I don't think anybody really thought about is that the government is in the midst of what they call a shutdown right now. So they got up there, and it was the time for them to go to the White House, except... like, you can't invite nobody into your home under no circumstance like that and not have some dining, right? Like, that's just kind of how it goes. You invite people to the White House, there's got to be a spread. But how is they going to get the spread? They didn't really have any money, and that would have been, like, horribly embarrassing if they just had them dudes up there and they was just standing around. Wasn't no DJ, you know what I'm saying? Like, wasn't no get down to be had. They was just going to be standing there. And so, apparently, the president of the United States was like, well, fine. He did like your pops does when your mom is out of town. He just handed over some money and was like, yo, go to McDonald's. In fact, go to Burger King. Go to Wendy's, too. And so what we wound up with was a spread of the three titans of the American fast food market. It was a spread at the White House of all the fast food. Except here's the thing about the White House, right? Gabe, you think they keep paper plates at the White House? Because I don't think they keep paper plates at the White House.
I would imagine they don't.
I mean, because we would all agree that all this McDonald's and Wendy's and Burger King, that's a paper plate meal, right?
Yeah, I would say so.
Like if for whatever reason you got to get plates for this circumstance, you go get the paper plates. In fact, Gabe, I ask you, when's the last time, I don't know, you strike me as the type that might not even eat that stuff anyway, but when's the last time you ate any of that stuff off a plate?
You know what? That requires you eating it from home.
Yeah.
So typically when I've had, you know, fast food, I'm eating it there, you know, or I'm eating it in the car on the way to somewhere else.
Right. You eat it off a tray or you pull your burger or your nuggets out the bag and you just leave the fries in there, right? Like, so a lot of us have probably never considered eating our McDonald's or Burger King or Wendy's off of a plate. But see, the White House probably doesn't have paper plates. And since the White House probably doesn't have paper plates, they really only got one kind of plate at the White House. Good plates. And so you look at the table and it's all the good plates. And I don't imagine that they be having like no barbecues in that room or anything like that. So they don't like have no picnic table set up. You know what I mean? They don't have the tablecloth with the checkerboard joint. They don't have that. All they got is what they got for any time somebody come in that room. They got the candles. And so they lit up the big old like candles all over the table. And it was surrounded by McDonald's and Burger King and Wendy's. It was just stacks of Big Macs and Quarter Pounders. I didn't see no Whoppers. I didn't see no Double Stacks. I didn't see those pictures. I don't know how exactly it works. I'm not sure if there were Frosties, but I imagine that they would recognize the need for dessert. They said they didn't have shakes from McDonald's because the shake machine wasn't working. Gabe, what time you think they called to put in this McDonald's order? Does it sound like it was planned in advance? Because I don't feel like this was planned in advance.
I mean, imagine the coordination that it would take to order that many items from all those different fast food joints. I mean, it doesn't take quite as much coordination as like having an actual big dinner would be. But still, I mean, they've got to be sending like little White House aides all about the town.
They said they got it. They brought 1,000 of them in there.
Good God.
And my boy Rod made a point. You got to remember that the president is a public figure. And not everybody voted for the president. But it sounds like the name that was on the order was the president's name, right? And like when I go to restaurants and go to like places like that, I don't put my name down as the name that's going to be on the receipt. And you know why I don't? Because ain't everybody my fan. Not everybody's rooting for me. Some people are rooting against me. And if somebody who's rooting against me is working on the line in the fast food place, there is a non-zero possibility that he might spit in my food. Gabe, the president is way more famous than I am. By definition, he has a lot more people rooting against him than I do. Gabe, somebody spit in that food.
You know what? I did not even think of that possibility.
Yeah, not all the food, right? But some of the food. Somebody spit in some of the food.
Can we be privy to any of the potential pseudonyms that you have used?
Why would I do that? I don't know. why do you think people who work in food service don't listen to this podcast?
Well, it is an opt-in scenario, listening
yeah,
to the right
some
time.
Some people are weird, and not everybody's going to love you forever.
Okay, fair point.
Yeah, yeah.
Secret's safe with me.
Yeah, yeah. No, actually, I'm not even going to tell you. You might mess around and slip. But that is what happened. And so, like, imagine that you left from your campus. You have won the national championship. You have arrived at the White House. You ready to eat, right? Like, think about this. I'm sure that Dabo had a talk with them boys before they went into the White House. It was probably on the bus. And I imagine, you know, Dabo Country, you notice this from Dabo's interviews, Dabo Country. And one thing you got to understand about country folk is, one, you don't never get so far away from the country that, like, you don't appreciate being around some, like, really nice stuff, right? It'll never, like, wear off you as a country person that you're not supposed to be wherever it is that you are, right? So there's that. But the other thing is, I imagine the Dabo looked at them boys on the bus, and I imagine the Dabo was like, all right, fellas, we're about to go in here. We about to go to the White House. And, you know, not everybody, you know, Dabo ain't stupid. Dabo understands that this can be a polarizing sort of situation. And he's looking at everybody and he's like, now, look, I understand, you know, some of you guys have your own beliefs and different views, you know, about this stuff. And, you know, now's not the time for that. This is an honor for us. And even if you don't, you know, agree with the president on some things, fellas, I bet we about to eat good. Right? Wouldn't you be expected to eat good when you go to a sit, when you go to something like that?
I want to say I felt like that we got wind of this before it was about to happen, right?
Yeah, before the doors opened, we found out. But you know they thought they was about to eat good.
Oh, right.
Like you're on the bus the whole way. Hey man, I was talking about things that we all got in common. Can we be real about this? Nobody likes a funeral, but everybody like a spread. You know what I mean? I remember my best friend in college died, and we went to that funeral, and it was, you know, pretty miserable. And then afterward, after the burial, one of my partners was like, hey, man, you know, let's get out of here, man. You know, I was like, you know, let's get out. We're like, get out of here and go where? We about to go hit this spread. He's like, I'm saying we can go somewhere and get our own food. Hell no, we ain't going nowhere to get our own food. This has been prepared with love. Like, there ain't nothing we about to go, and ain't nothing I can afford in that year about to be better than this. Like, everybody loves spread, man. Them boys is getting ready to go in there, and they're like, yo, man, what you think we about to eat? What you think they made for us, right? And as I recall from the time and when this event took place, it wasn't an hors d'oeuvre reception. You know, like, this supposed to be a meal. And them boys thought they was about to go in there, and they was about to be, like, on some stuff. And you gotta understand, man, these boys are accustomed to eating good. And part of why they're accustomed to eating good is, one, you know, all the training table stuff at school and everything like that. But the other thing that you got to remember, when these boys go on road trips, they stay in nice hotels and stuff. You know why they stay in nice hotels? Don't nobody care if the boys stay in nice hotels. The coaches want to stay in nice hotels. Right. So when it's time to go to out somewhere for dinner as a team, that coach makes millions of dollars a year. He ain't taking y'all to Chili's. He's so far past Chili's at this point in his life. You going to eat where he go to eat. Dog, y'all got to the White House and it's McDonald's. It ain't even Chick-fil-A.
There's a hierarchy to this stuff.
Yo, keep it real. Chick-fil-A would have been the politically expedient choice. And while it may have been a little bit beneath the occasion, it's still Chick-fil-A. Like, people feel like there's a mark of quality to that. You know? Nah, man. It was Big Mac, quarter. Like, I was like, man, I couldn't tell if there was some Whoppers. My homeboy said that he saw that they had the Burger King nuggets, and he was disappointed because he feels that Burger King's nuggets are the lowest on the hierarchy. That's his own personal belief. I personally don't make endorsements or denouncements of anybody that might advertise with this company. Dog. And they broke out the good plates and the heavy forks. Did you see the forks?
Oh, I did. I mean, this was all like silver.
Yeah, it was the heavy forks. And I got news for you. At least one of those forks would have come home with me. First of all, I saw they had some salads out there. But at the same time, pass the salad. Did you see anything there that required a fork?
No, I didn't. I didn't. And even the salads were encased in plastic.
Nah. I mean, y'all don't need these forks. One of these forks, at least one. Who am I kidding? 19-year-old me, I'm walking out there with some forks. Them's about to be heirlooms for the family. Like, pass it on down. I'm trying to get me a set of, how many you feel like you need to have like a full family set? Like a set of eight?
Probably.
I'm walking out of there clank-a-lankin' with all this stuff. Clank-a-lankin'. Yeah, man. Like, I came up here and all this is McDonald's? Yeah, I'm walking out of here with a fork. I feel like you really couldn't get out of there with nothing else. Like, you had to be extra gangster to just walk out of there with a plate.
You don't think they would have walked out through metal detectors?
Well, why you walk out through a metal detector? You walk in through the metal detector.
Yeah, but this is the White House, man.
Yeah. But, I mean, they're not worried about you stealing. They're worried about you shooting.
That's a fair point.
Yeah. Nah, that's fine. And even if it happens, like, oh, dad, my bad. I had got this handful of forks to bring to the homies in the corner. And just, you know, since we were eating burgers and fries, I forgot to give them to them because nobody actually needed a fork. You can talk your way out of that one. That's not that difficult. I did go to high school with a dude. We went on a trip to Texas A&M, and he walked out of the little spot in the student center with a tray, like a full tray. And then he informed me that this was just what he does, and he referred to it as liberating things, which led me to believe that he has a, you know, maybe a problem. And he told me that his greatest accomplishment was liberating a chair from Jack in the Box.
Liberating.
He liberated a chair from Jack in the Box.
His greatest accomplishment.
I mean,
how do you get that thing out the door?
Yeah, he's Harriet Tubman, man. And I really want to know how he got this chair out of Jack in the Box.
He's
the liberator. You know what I'm saying? But he got a chair. He got a chair out of Jack in the Box. And I feel like if that dude can get a chair out of Jack in the Box, one by one, enough of us could walk out of there. We can get a full set of plates out of the White House. I think it could be done.
Liberated.
That's right. I am freeing you. Live the life you've always dreamed of living. This great big old heavy plate. Yeah, man. Them dudes was at the White House. And listen to this, man. So I was on Twitter talking about this a little bit last night, right? And I said that the best part of that was that they broke out the good plates. One of these, like, political Instagram accounts captured me saying the best part is they broke out the good plates for these extra value meals. They're going to be drinking Coke out of goblets. This is a story these young men will tell forever. And he took this as being support. I'm like, no. If I go to the White House and they got burgers, fries, and drinks in the heavy, like, I'm going to remember this forever from here, and I wasn't even there. That is absent of the politics. No matter who it was, I would remember this forever. Speaking of remembering things forever, Gabe, how long you think them burgers have been sitting out there?
Oh, I mean, see, that's the thing about fast food is, like, if you don't eat it within 30 minutes of it being served.
Yes. I feel like the heat that kills all the stuff that needs to be killed for you to eat when you do fast food, like, the heat doesn't kill all of it. It kills most of it. And if you don't get this at the height of the heat, these things going to start coming back to life. You understand what I'm saying? like it's going to start. It's a curve in the rate of. Yeah, that's the. Anyway, that reminds me. I hope none of them young boys ate a cold burger. By the way, shout out to the strength and conditioning coach who probably made the trip and had to be mortified at what he was putting into his well-oiled machines. Like, they got this whole thing about how meticulously they care about those kids' diets and all of that stuff. And now you are pumping them with this fast food. But be careful eating a cold burger. Gabe, I ever tell you about the time that my brother ate a cold burger?
You did not.
Oh, well, here's my brother talking about that time he ate a cold burger.
When I was in Memphis, I had a job where I would go make sales calls in Mississippi. One morning, I left out the house, didn't eat breakfast, was hustling, making calls all morning. So it's like 2 o'clock when it's time for me to go back to Memphis, and I haven't eaten anything. And I'm one of those people that always has to eat. So I make a bad decision to stop at / Exxon station. I go through the drive-thru, order a number 2. Get out back on the road, reach down in the bag, and realize something's really wrong because my burger is cold. Now, I could have taken that burger back, but it would have meant exiting the highway, getting back on the highway, exit again, come back around. I'm not doing that because I'm starving to death. So I rationalized that, you know, this burger is cold, but I took a bite and it's like, hey, the bread is fresh. You know what? Cookout burgers are often cold. And the bread isn't nearly this fresh, so this should be fine. By the time I got back to Memphis, I knew nothing was fine. So tell my roommate, this cat named Gerard, what was going on. And Gerard is like a worldly cat. Gerard's been all around the world. He used to play with Kool and the Gang. And Gerard has been on this colonic kick. And I don't know what's up with being on a colonic kick, but I knew I wanted no parts of it until that moment. When Gerard says, you know it'll hook you right up. I'm like, what? He's like, the colonic. I'm like, man, go get it. So Gerard comes back, and it's like this Metamucil-type sand mixture that he takes and he puts it in a glass of water and stirs it up. It's like, drink this. I drink it. In fact, I gulped it down because I was starting to be really, really, really sick. The colonic did not do a lot for me. What it did was made me look like I was about 2 or 3 months pregnant. So now I've got more stuff in my stomach. Nothing's coming out. I'm feeling awful. And randomly I get a phone call from this woman that I had just met like a week before. Like, we had exchanged numbers, hadn't really talked to her much. So this is one of my first conversations with her, and I tell her what's going on with me. And she's like, well, my sister was at a restaurant that had a food poisoning issue, and they gave people Ipecac syrup. She didn't use it, but I could get hers and bring it over. I was ready to try anything. Now, granted, having a woman bring Ipecac syrup over to induce vomiting is probably not the way to ensure that you're ever going to have anything going with her. But at this point, that was secondary. So she comes over, brings the Ipecac syrup. I get it, and I read the label. And the label says, take 1 teaspoon, wait 20 minutes. If nothing happens, take another teaspoon. So I used the big man logic, and it was like, well, I'm going to take a tablespoon and wait 20 minutes. So now I take a tablespoon of Ipecac syrup, wait 20 minutes, still nothing. I'm even more miserable. I'm sweating bullets. So I decide, all right, it's been 20 minutes. I'm going to take another teaspoon. Took another teaspoon, 20 minutes and 10 seconds. It was on and popping. Ran to the bathroom, had the lockup upchuck, you know, where you're like gripping the sides of the toilet. You can't even move. You're like a cat. Your back is completely arched. A couple of things came back to haunt me. Number one, as you might expect, the colonic. Throwing up sand is not a good feeling, particularly when you throw that sand up through your nose. The other thing I want to point out is that Ipecac syrup has some kind of crazy alcohol content, like 14%. So now I'm throwing sand and alcohol up through my nose, which now my head is on fire. Next thing that happens is, you ever try to catch your breath while you're throwing up and get an air bubble in your chest? It feels like you're having a heart attack. So now I got that going on. I'm having a heart attack, my head is on fire, and I'm throwing up. I don't know how it happened, but I ended up on the ground, rolling around back and forth between the toilet and the tub like I was an exorcist. And while all this chaos is going on, I have this moment of clarity, and the only thing I'm thinking is, I'll never eat again. And I haven't since.
Yeah, you were ready for that, were you?
No, I wasn't. I'm a little horrified right now.
Yeah, man, so I hope nobody ate a cold burger. I saw a lot of people tweet about that, like, they're 18 years old. They'll love that. They're 18. They're not 8. Oh, I forgot, Gabe, there was also pizza. I didn't see, like, actually see the pizza, but apparently it was pizza. Yeah, they're 18. They're not 8. They're not 8. They, trust me, they was clowning. They, the ones that went, they were clowning. Cause you know who else is there too, right? You know it was some boosters, right?
Oh, I'm sure.
You know, like, you know, there's some money that'd be surrounding that program. You know they was there. You know what they were like. Are you serious? Yeah. Oh my gosh. That just, I'm sorry. If we get to a point where we can't just laugh about this, I don't care what you are. Like, I'm not there. I am not at that place where I cannot laugh at this idea of showing up to the White House and you throwing me a bag like I'm on the bus and we stopped on the way to a basketball trip. But hey, man, when I was in high school, that was the thing. We stopped at McDonald's on the basketball trips and, everybody would get a quarter pounder with cheese, value meal with a Coke. Everybody got the same drink. Quarter pound, it's the same exact thing. These guys had the option of choosing a Filet-O-Fish. And that's how you know they were champions. All right, Kyler Murray put his name in the draft. Good for him, right? I have, like, I don't know if pity is the right word, but this has got to be tough for him. Because he really wants to play in the NFL. Like, he sees himself as a football player. He is a better football player, or has been a better football player than he has been a baseball player. And that's what he wants to do. He wants to be the quarterback. It's not a really smart play, but hey, that's the way that he wants to go with this. Like, hey, think about this one. I think that Jeff Samardzija was a sure bet as a football player than Kyler Murray is as a football player. Jeff Samardzija went and got that bread, played that baseball.
Yeah, I mean, just like you said, by nature of the positions, given that Samardzija was like a really tall wide receiver, he fit the mold, whereas Kyler Murray's an undersized QB.
Yeah, like that was a sure, it was much more guaranteed that Jeff Samardzija was going to get 7 to 8 years worth of checks. He was good too. Than it was on this other side. Samardzija, I think it may be different also because Samardzija is a pitcher.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's what it is, but he wants to roll the dice on the NFL. And so what the word is that he is told to A's, hey, man, y'all find a way to give me $15 million. I'll come play baseball. And Major League Baseball is working to try to find a way to get Kyler Murray to come play baseball. They got their marketing people talking to him. They are willing to waive rules that stop you from paying somebody. Because basically the thing is, in order to pay Murray that kind of money, they'd have to put him on the 40-man roster. And you cannot, in the course of signing somebody, promise that you're going to put him on the 40-man roster. And so they are willing to waive that because they believe that when this deal was initially signed with the A's, that this was not on the table, which, by the way, seems to be totally true. They thought he was going to go live out his last year, like basically have his senior year and then come over here. Nah, he went out there, he won the Heisman Trophy, and now people are telling him that he could be a first round pick. Here's the thing I'm going to tell him, man. I think the most stressed out I've ever been in my life is I had a situation where I was trying to decide once between two jobs and I wanted one of them way more than the other. So what I did was I was told, you know, I didn't tell the other this, but the idea was basically like they're going to have to come up with some ungodly sum of money, or what at the time to me seemed like an ungodly sum of money, in order for me to take it. And then they did. And so you wind up with, here's this thing that I don't want to do, but now I can't say no to it. And that's not really a good feeling. Like it could wind up being for him that the trickiest thing that could happen is them doing is them saying, fine, here's $15 million. If that is not what he wants to do. Now I'm on record and I'm not backing off of this. I think choosing to play football when you have a way to make millions of dollars doing literally anything else in the world is stupid. Like, if this is the way that you, the only real option that you got to get it done, then go ahead. Like, I get it. But if you got $4 million staring you in the face, go take it. They are not going to beat you down in order for you to get that $4 million. People out here are like, hey, man, but you know, how happy are you going to be when you're out here playing for the Belmont Snappers? Gabe, you know how far my money going to stretch in Belmont?
You can get a big old house.
You can get whatever you want, right? You cruising through like you got this bread. And I understand that making the major leagues is difficult. It is no guarantee that being a first round pick that you are going to make the major leagues. I get all of that, but it is a guarantee that nobody's going to be hitting you in the kidneys on a regular basis. I struggle to believe that people are so wrapped up in this capitalism that they are willing to do literally anything as long as there's a check attached to it. Let me tell you something. But here's the thing I will say though, and this is on the flip side, because if there's anything that I've learned in my travels, which are kind of unconventional, you can get a whole lot of money in your hands, man. It's not going to make you happier. Like, that's not really how this works. Now, you got to get some money to have it to survive in this game. But getting money, like, it provides you convenience and in some measures luxury, but it just doesn't. And I understand everybody that ain't got no money that's like, well, I'd like to give it a try. No, you're right. Having money, better than not having money. But people I don't think are necessarily that realistic about what it does about, like, your actual quality of life beyond very like technical, you know, economic sort of terms. Like I think that people get that mixed up. The thing is, it doesn't sound like Murray's going to be happy playing baseball. I just don't think he's going to be happy 20 years down the line with his body after playing football. People out here talking about, well, you know, they got all these rules now in place that protect the quarterback. The quarterback barely get hit. Okay, what do you think Cam Newton think when people say that?
Yeah, he's been taking a lot of shots over the years.
Yeah, and it's not like Murray is going to be doing like all the running between the tackles that Cam does. Like, that's not going to be his game. But the idea of having him is to move him around. And once you get outside the pocket, all those rules go out the window. And Kyler Murray isn't necessarily going to get the calls like Tom Brady gets the calls. Not all these quarterbacks are getting the same calls when it comes to these hits and protections and everything else that happens to be there. And that's before we get to the fact that this young man is small. You know, so I think the game is now played in a way that's probably a bit more conducive for a quarterback his height to play. But nah, man, it sounds like it's going to hurt. So he's in the draft. He's put his name in there. I think if I'm him, I go report to the A's camp on the 11th. He doesn't need to go to the combine. Honestly, I don't think he needs to run a 40-yard dash. Like, I think he needs to do, like, passing drills and stuff like that. But nah, like, fast as hell. Okay, got it. Noted. You know? Like, I don't think anybody's going to look at the stopwatch and then be like, oh, my goodness, he's fast. Nah. You know what it is. You know a lot about what his arm is. You can go in there and you can watch the film. I don't think that he's, like, a top 10 pick, but I do think this is a draft that doesn't have quarterbacks.
The thing about it is, too, is that the less he does, the higher the intrigue is.
Yes.
So, like, right now there's a lot of intrigue because he has not been planning on going to the NFL. So this, because he hasn't been planning on going to the NFL, he's been planning on going to baseball. It's almost like, oh, well, you know, we almost have to convince him to go into the NFL draft. So he's going to go really high.
Yeah,
we promise we'll take you.
Yeah, well, there's some agent that's definitely saying that.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Like every agent is like, kid, you're going to be a star. You know, they're all saying that. And I would also be curious to know what level of evaluation that the teams did of him, given that we didn't think that he was going to be in the league. But, hey, man, let's look at this. Teams that I would argue are in the market for quarterbacks, not necessarily that need quarterbacks, but could be in the market for a quarterback. I would say Miami is in the market. Cincinnati, I never know what they're going to do because they've stuck with that dude this long anyway, but I could put Cincinnati in that category. Jacksonville, I would put in that category. So that's three. Denver has to be giving it some measure of thought. That is four. Oakland should too, but I know John Gruden ain't going for that type of quarterback. Washington, oh boy, that would be horrible to do the young man. They need to be thinking about a quarterback. New York needs to be thinking about a quarterback. That's five. Nobody in the NFC North is looking at a quarterback, which is kind of funny when you think about it. Nobody in the South. Five. Yeah, so there are five teams out there that I think legitimately like should be looking at a quarterback. The odds are in his favor because there aren't really five quarterbacks that are out there. I just don't I don't envy him for this at all. Not even a bit. Gabe, think about this. What if he just gets to baseball and he's just a dude?
Yeah, I mean, he was a high draft pick, right? He was
the
ninth pick overall by the A's. Yes. But, I mean, how many top 10 picks in baseball could you name, even if you were a super big baseball fan?
Yeah, no, that's part of it.
The rate of hit is not very high.
Yeah, also my thing, yeah, but that's my thing for baseball, though, and the way that they're handling this, I don't see a payoff for what they're doing. Like, for what they're proposing? One, I don't think Kyler Murray's, like, that famous. Like, we're not talking about Tim Tebow coming straight out of college. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't think that people are going to, like, how many people are going to go to a baseball stadium to watch Kyler Murray play the outfield? I don't know about that. Like, the thing about Tebow is Tebow doesn't have people that are just interested in him or find him exciting. Tebow has people who love him.
Yeah, Kyler Murray is not really a brand like
right.
that. Like, you should be selling out for.
Yeah. That's what I mean. Like, they got maybe the second best baseball player of my lifetime playing in a Los Angeles subsidiary of sorts, but Los Angeles nonetheless, and nobody cares.
I mean, is there a concern that they're like losing face to the NFL in the sense that we can't lose a top draft pick to the NFL. We've got to go all out to try and keep him.
Well, face has been lost
in
that way. But I do think for them that it would be embarrassing. The idea that he might be able to play in the NFL. We've taken you in the first round. Like, it has historically gone the other direction. That, like, if a guy was coming out of high school and he was a high draft pick in Major League Baseball, he'd sign the scholarship offer with the college to play football, maybe even show up in August to play, as a leverage play, and then sign your contract and go play baseball and then maybe come back to play football when you're like an old man. Like, that's always been the play. This would be a little bit of a shift if it went in the other direction. You can make an argument that there's no bad decision for Kyler Murray on this. And there also might not be a good decision. Wish you the best on that, kid. All right. AFC Championship game. Chiefs-Patriots. Yeah, we'll talk about that after it happens. I'm sure it'll be exciting, high-flying, all of those things, and very cold. But we got a matter of, like, public safety, public interest, things that matter to me more than they matter maybe to some of y'all, but things I need to pay attention to, which is, of course, that we have the Saints and the Rams in the NFC Championship game, and the Rams are our only hope to stop Atlanta from burning down. Because the Saints can't go play no Super Bowl in Atlanta. They can't. It can't be this. No. I've tried to explain this to some of y'all. A lot of y'all understand just how horrible a situation, a possibility that this could be. Like, people are like, well, Falcons fans really don't want is Patriots and Saints in there. The Patriots, they blew the lead of the Patriots and then the Saints. I feel like people who still root for the Falcons, which does not include me because I'm off that narcotic, but I feel like people who still root for the Falcons, I don't feel like they really got beef with the Patriots. Like, the Patriots didn't really have anything to do with the Falcons losing that Super Bowl. Falcons are going about the business of beating themselves. The Patriots just happened to be there. Like, somebody had to play that role. Basically, the Patriots were a placeholder in that moment, because that was just something it was going to have to be, no matter how it spun. Falcons lost that game. That was just going to happen, right? Patriots happened to be the team on the other side. The thing with the Saints is a lot more personal, and the Saints are very personal as it comes to the Falcons. And really, they both had pretty miserable existences for the histories of their franchises. The difference is somebody let the Saints win a Super Bowl one time. Now, somebody's Peyton Manning. Thanks for nothing. So the Saints always got that one. Now you talking about them marching into Atlanta to play a Super Bowl that they might win? Bruh, that's bad news. That's real, real, real bad news. And that's not good. And I'm telling you, it's going to be people fighting, like, in the streets. It's going to be some real problematic stuff that takes place. Y'all don't want that. Y'all don't need that. Because it's going to be a tense weekend in some ways anyway. A political observation, Gabe. The Super Bowl is being held in the city with the busiest airport in the world.
Really? It's the busiest airport in the world.
It's the busiest airport in the world. And TSA is understaffed.
Is that because Delta is like, that's where their hub is, and Delta is like, you know, the Sky Team brand where they have all these different airlines throughout the globe?
I guess that's possible. I don't know. I just need you to focus with me right now.
Okay, you've got my attention.
TSA is understaffed all across America, and there's going to be people flying in and out of the busiest airport in the world, which will probably also have understaffed TSA around that time. Do you realize the bad moods that people are going to be in when they get to Atlanta? Don't let it be cold or like any sort of inclement weather. Do you realize how salty people are going to be?
And traveling when you're salty is already not a good thing.
And going to a city that's got horrible traffic, right? And no real public transportation to allow you to avoid it. And then we're going to be talking about the possibility of a bunch of Saints fans coming in and rubbing it in people's faces. There's a whole lot of people in that city that don't care that the Super Bowl in town, but they just going to be out there in bad traffic just trying to get a meal or whatever their favorite restaurant is. You know what I'm saying? They just want something to eat. That's all. But it's going to be Saints fans everywhere. Does that sound safe to you, Gabe?
It doesn't. And some of the stuff that people were responding to, the stuff that could happen of Saints fans in Atlanta was cracking me up. Like the one from Spencer, we were just talking about smoking a pig in the ground or something.
Yeah, it's bad news. It's bad news. So, like, I have no choice on who I have to support in this matter, and it's not about rooting in any sort of sports sense, in spite of the fact that while I no longer root for the Falcons, I still hate the Saints with the fire of 1,000 suns. And it's not really that I hate the Saints, it's that I hate the people that root for them. Anyway, I have one hero going into this week. And that hero is Marcus Peters.
Were you where Sean Payton said after that New Orleans game, he said in that last sequence, we wanted, they got the matchup they wanted with you on him one-on-one.
Tell Sean Payton, keep talking that we going to see him soon. You feel me?
Fair enough.
Yeah, because I like what he was saying on the sidelines too. So tell him, keep talking that and I hope you see me soon. You feel me? And then we going to have a good little, nice little bowl of gumbo together.
That is so much better with the video, though, where he goes from, like, the smile to the straight face.
Yeah, it was my favorite part.
Well, the other part is where he tells Sean Payton, keep talking that bleep, and the reporter goes, fair enough. Like, that dude is terrified. And like Marcus Peters' whole steez, like, nothing's going to happen, but his whole steez is so wildly unpredictable. Just don't get lit up, though. Like, that's the one thing. They had to make some changes to the defense after that game. But like the Saints got Michael Thomas to throw to, and then I think Ted Ginn is their number two receiver, still in the league, by the way. And then after that, man, it's just some dudes. I ain't never heard of them cats. Like the other ones that's just out there. So they had a dude out there named Kirkwood. Never heard of him. I ain't got no idea who that is. Like, they're lacking number two receiver. I guess Kamara is their number two receiver, really, but they're lacking number two receiver is where this thing becomes a bit of an issue for them. And by the way, shout out to Sean McVay, the greatest NFL coach of all time, just won his first playoff game. It's not shade to him. It's not his fault. He's just out here doing his job. It's shade to everybody else and their silliness and their stupidity. Did you hear what I said on TV the other day about how we could fix the NFL diversity problem in coaching?
I didn't hear that.
That was very simple. Sean McVay just needs to start hiring a bunch of black dudes. If all you got to do is be cool with Sean McVay, Sean McVay can hire 4 or 5 black dudes and all of a sudden diversity problems fixed. He's bringing a couple every year as long as they keep hiring dudes just because they know Sean McVay. That's all you got to do. Arizona just said he was friends with him. Not even that they worked together nowhere. They went on no staff. He was just like, yeah, they're friends. Cliff Kingsbury's 7 years older than Sean McVay. And he got to claim the little homie. Yeah. That really happened.
Claim the little homie.
Yeah. That's got to be kind of humbling. You know what I'm saying? He just need to go out here, hire all the brothers, man. He get them on. He'll have the it'd be a great coaching tree. I don't want to speculate what kind of fruit would be growing from their coaching tree because somebody will mess around and take the joke too far. But yeah, that's how they need to solve that. But I need Sean McVay. If Sean McVay really a genius, then go ahead and be that genius and help save a city. Save some lives. Save some people. Fine. Do it for me. I don't care about the rest of them.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bo, this first story comes from Tech and Security.
This is Sam Biddle. I'm a reporter with The Intercept. Last week, I reported a story about Ring, which is a security camera company now owned by Amazon. Ring sells a whole line of cameras that are meant to keep tabs on your property while you're away. So you can check in while you're at work or on vacation. Not only does Ring allow owners of the cameras to keep tabs in their homes, they were, according to multiple sources, also providing access to just a bunch of people at the company. Ring has a big staff of research and development and software engineers in Ukraine. They granted access to their customer video database so that people in Ukraine would have full, complete access to Ring customer files, which means that a lot of people who had no good reason to be viewing these files could have had access to them and could have shared them and downloaded them and done anything they wanted with them. There was also this sort of improper, pretty loose access in the U.S. office where people who, again, didn't need to be looking at videos from people's doorbells and garages and maybe inside the home also could view this stuff. Another problem that I reported on was Ring's use of video taggers in this Ukraine office, where the company basically employs people whose job it is to sit and watch customer videos and identify objects on the screen. So like draw a box around a tree and say this is a tree, around a dog and say this is a dog. And the idea is that Ring will be able to automatically identify this stuff in videos. So, you know, maybe potentially you could get a notification that says, the mailman's here. It would be able to differentiate between your wife or husband when they come over as opposed to a robber or just a total stranger. But the AI technology that Ring was trying to use for this purpose didn't really work that well. So they were using people to do it manually, kind of a Wizard of Oz behind the curtain thing where what a lot of people probably assume is being done by sophisticated software is actually just being done by a bunch of people in an office in Ukraine. So I think it's important this information is out there, and I think it will probably give a lot of people some pause when they're thinking about buying one of these cameras or of keeping up the one they maybe already purchased.
Yo, I think people greatly overestimate how badly they need these cameras. Right? Is that fair to say?
Your house is not like the local 7-Eleven. You don't have that type of traffic.
Yeah. And by the way, I feel like finding out how many people like surround your, like come around your door when you're out will do nothing but make you paranoid. Like, I don't know. Have you ever worked from home like consistently?
I mean, I work from home often, but I live in an apartment building, so it's not like I have, you know, eyes on the outside traffic like that.
Yeah, I don't think working people realize how many folks just be coming to your door. Like, just be around the house all the time. This is just kind of in the natural rhythm, of things that goes on. And so people get these cameras and, like, I mean, so I know somebody who had something delivered and the camera on the porch saw somebody take it off the porch and then run away. Right. But now what? You know what I mean? Like, you know somebody stole this from you, but you really got no solution outside of that to this problem. You don't really have much that you can do after that point. Like, I get it. Like people who use services like their dog walking services now, where they have a key and they come in and they walk the dog for you while you're gone. And people like to have the camera so that they can see, you know, if somebody's coming in and doing, you know, and like stealing from them or something like that. Like, I understand it. I'm just not sure that the trade is enough given the access that you're giving people that is for what is a fairly low likelihood that the thing you have the camera for is going to pick up something that you're trying to see. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I mean, the thing about it is these folks who bought these, you know, devices don't believe that they're making a trade, did not know this. So, I mean, the upside is very low to have one of these ring devices at your home.
I would also say for these people, these are also people who have like two-step authentication for their social media accounts, but hadn't considered the possibility that maybe somebody else can watch this video stuff.
It just strikes me that these are probably the people that put like a little piece of electrical tape over their laptop.
Yes.
You know, or
because they're paranoid.
Yeah.
Right? It's for the same reason. They are paranoid, but they're also paranoid.
Talk about your all-time backfire.
Yeah. Let me say cautious. Paranoid is unfair. Let me say they are cautious, and I think cautious is appropriate. But yeah, man, no, they watching us, bro. Like, I mean, this, we have given them the keys to our shackles.
Yes, we have. Yeah. I mean, you could say that these folks are cautious. That's another word for cautious. Yeah. But you're right. I mean, if with great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah, these companies are, here's the thing, it's not just that these companies aren't simply here to help us, it's that they can make money by hurting us, and yes, they are there to make money. Simple as that.
Yes, I mean, as we've, you know, heard many times, these companies are ingesting your data, and what are they going to do with that data? They're going to try and make money off of it.
Yep. Yep.
Oh boy.
What's next?
This next story is a little happier. It's about tech and transportation.
My name is Peter Holly, and I'm a reporter covering technology for the Washington Post. My latest story is about a technology that could be used to solve some of the serious congestion issues that cities across the country are currently facing. One potential solution might be the Bell Nexus, an urban air mobility vehicle, also known as a flying car. Now, today's flying cars don't really resemble the Jetsons. They look more like a mixture of a helicopter and a drone. Unfortunately, this vehicle isn't ready to be flown. The Bell Nexus vehicle is still a prototype, but it seats 5 passengers, and it's powered with a hybrid electric propulsion system featuring 6 tilting fans. These vehicles take off vertically, and the hope is that they can travel as fast as 150 to maybe even 200 miles an hour. That would get you across a city like Los Angeles, Houston, New York, or Chicago in minutes. The company told me, for example, that a trip from the Dallas suburbs to DFW Airport, a trip that normally takes an hour and a half, could be completed in about 8 minutes. A vision for how this technology might operate is already taking shape. The idea is that you would pull up an app and go to the nearest skyport. Once there, you'd hop in a vehicle and take your trip. The idea is that it would be as cheap as taking an Uber, for example. Not surprisingly, that probably explains why Bell Nexus has partnered with Uber. The two companies are working to make this vision a reality in some capacity by the mid-2020s, so about 6 years. One company official told me that the biggest challenge to developing air taxis is not the technology. They know they can build these things. It's the regulation. Until the regulations are changed, you can count on sitting on that traffic jam for a few more years.
So what's the catch?
What do you mean what the catch is?
What's the catch? None of the stuff is good, right? So how is this going to destroy us?
Well, I mean, the thing that is maybe not thought about quite that deeply by people who are excited about the possibility of, you know, flying to, you know, flying across town or whatever, is just how different things are going to look when you've got the skies covered with a bunch of flying vehicles. Yeah. Like, it's going to look like Star Wars, you know, or Blade Runner.
I also think about it on this level, right? Like, it's the same thing I think about when they talk about, like, these super express trains that would, like, get you from D.C. to New York in, like, half an hour or something like that. Here's the problem with that. Everybody going to want to go from D.C. to New York. We ain't trying to go from here to D.C. You know how hard it's going to be to get a dinner reservation if they can come up from D.C. in 30 minutes?
Yeah. Oh, man. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. Like, it's a one-directional flow, man. No. I don't. I kind of like it being hard to get from place to place. It stops some of y'all from coming with me.
Oh, boy. All right. This last one comes from music.
Travis Scott will perform at this year's Super Bowl halftime show on February 3rd, but he made it clear to the NFL that he would only do so under one condition. On Sunday, the NFL announced that Maroon 5, Big Boy, and Scott are the musical acts set to play the halftime show at Atlanta's Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Scott's involvement was confirmed to Billboard back in December, and the Sicko Mode rapper took some heat for the gig. Many have voiced their disapproval of Scott's choice to team up with the NFL following their treatment of Colin Kaepernick, and several artists, including Rihanna, Jay-Z, and Cardi B, have reportedly turned down halftime offers to demonstrate their support for the quarterback and activist. Scott, instead, told the NFL to break out the checkbook for a good cause. Sources close to the negotiations confirmed to Billboard that he would only move forward with the halftime show if the NFL agreed to partner with him in making a hefty charitable donation. He wanted the money to support an organization fighting for social justice, and so together, Scott and the NFL are kicking $500,000 to DreamCorps.
Yeah, it's a Hillary Hughes from Billboard, and Travis Scott sold cheap. $500,000?
Yeah, it's not that much.
What's 500 divided by 32? That's $15,000 per team. Basically, $15,625 per team. That's $500,000. Is that hefty?
No.
Hey, and look, if that's what he wanted to do and that was his plan, I mean, I understand where it was coming from. Like, look, I'm not in the place to judge him because I'm probably going to go to the game. So, like, there's somebody else that could talk about that in a way that I cannot in good moral conscience. It's also interesting. Travis Scott's young. Big Boy going. Ain't nobody really asking questions about that. I mean, I guess he want to put on for the hometown in that way. But I wonder, because I think, did Jay-Z try to call Travis Scott and talk him out of it?
Yes, he did.
I wonder if Travis Scott called him about the $500,000. I feel like if you're like, you're going to have to make a sizable donation to something, it's going to need to be more than $500,000. And honestly, it's going to need to be more than one organization if that's the approach that you are choosing to take. Like, again, I simply am not the person that gets to personally judge it in that way. But I would hate to be in the position, like, after the other people have said no, now you the one that say yes? That does not. That don't look so good. You know what I mean? Like, that's not a position that you want to be in, especially when, hey, man, that's a great gig. Keep it real. It's a great gig. The only thing I would say, though, in response to the idea that it's a great gig that they give to people who are already made in such a way. So, like, yeah, there are some people who will be introduced to Travis Scott who hadn't met him before, but you're pretty big now as it is. But, hey, man, $500,000. Just aim bigger, buddy. Aim bigger.
Now, how do you feel about those three acts representing, you know, music for the Super Bowl?
Well, I don't like
Atlanta.
I don't find Maroon 5, like, I find them pleasant. You know, I ain't got no problem with them. Listen to them. They all right. But let's be clear. They did not get Maroon 5 to headline that act because of what I think about them or what you think about them, Gabe.
Yeah, but I just thought, you know, as a native son of Atlanta, you know, yeah, if they could have done better.
Now, the halftime, I don't see the halftime act as having anything to do with the city. I don't connect those things in that way. Like, I guess it's cool to have Big Boy on there for Atlanta in such a way, and hopefully he'll bring some dungeon dudes out because that would be cool. But like, I don't think about it in that way. But I know Maroon 5, Adam Levine's Q rating is not dependent on what any of us dudes think. Well, maybe, you know, some of us dudes, yes. But not most of y'all listening to this podcast. You know, that ain't, like, some of y'all going to have a hard time changing the channel when they come on. If you want to be like, I don't even want to watch this, we're watching this. That's going to happen. And then Travis Scott, hey, I listened to that Astroworld the other day. Those songs sure sound remarkably similar.
Remarkably similar to what?
To each other.
Oh, okay. To each other.
Because I was like, wow, this track list is really long. Then I looked down. I'd be like, damn, that was 7 different songs? Are you sure? Oh, okay.
Have you ever watched the game and thought, wow, I didn't know they still played? Well, you're not alone. The Right Time with Bomani Jones asked the question. Is he still in the league?
Okay, well, mid-season, still in the league time. Some players have gotten cut since, so I've had to trim the list.
Ah!
Yes, yes, yes. But you will not know who's gotten cut from this list. First up, Devin Harris.
Yo, I know he's still in the league, and it's only because he had a monster fourth quarter the other day. Do you realize that this is Devin Harris's 15th year in the NBA?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's been around for a long, long time.
I was shocked that he was in the league and then shocked that he'd been in the league that long. He's aged well, at least in the face. I don't know about in the game.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing about it is, too, when you've, like, seen several rebuilds, you know you've been around for a long time.
Yes.
Oh, boy. All right, next one, Jose Calderon.
Ooh. I'm going to guess that he's still in the league.
Oh, good guess. Detroit Pistons still in the league.
Wow, I was trying to get that wrong on purpose.
On purpose? Why on purpose?
Because people like it when I get stuff wrong. I never thought of him that he was actually in the league. Wow, how old is he?
Oh, he's in his late 30s.
At least.
Next one for you. Shelvin Mack.
Ooh. Huh. I feel like I would have heard his name if he's still in the league. He's not in the league.
Oh, he is.
Really?
Yes, he's with the Memphis Grizzlies.
Wow. Yo, you want to talk about a team I know I haven't seen play, because I keep hearing all these things about Jaren Jackson Jr., and I'm pretty sure he's a big man.
I mean, with the Grizzlies, they are just stockpiling these still-in-the-league guys.
Yeah, so Shelvin Mack is still in the league. Good for him. I never thought he'd play a minute in the NBA.
Next one for you. Kendall Marshall.
Oh, okay. This is unfair. I know that Kendall Marshall's not in the league just because Kendall Marshall would be sitting behind the bench at every North Carolina game because he's on the staff. He is visibly not in the league. He is publicly not in the league. He did not stay long at all, by the way.
No, he did not. I mean, there were certainly some high hopes for him. The kind of almost a little hyped up too much, kind of like Alonzo. Like, oh, he's a distributor. He's got next level intelligence on the court.
Yeah, here was the thing, though, about Kendall Marshall. Do you remember him in North Carolina?
I do.
Okay. I, in my life, have never seen a team improve more by changing out one player for another than North Carolina improved by changing out Larry Drew to Kendall Marshall. I've never seen anything like this. And remember, Larry Drew ultimately became a first-team All-Pac-12 player in that year that he played at UCLA. I had never seen a guy make a team like have that much of an effect on a team like I did there. I mean, it was the wildest thing in the world. And so I looked at him like, I don't know about this, but I couldn't blame somebody for trying. He was like 6'5". He just slow.
Next one for you, Dante Cunningham.
He's tall. He's still in the league.
He's with the Spurs.
Yeah, I'm saying he's tall.
Another team that's stockpiling still in the league players.
Yeah, I ain't gonna lie, man. I don't find myself watching the Spurs at all these days. The Spurs got a bunch of dudes. It's DeMar DeRozan, LaMarcus Aldridge, and a bunch of dudes. Some of them dudes are just the dudes who've been playing for the Spurs so long. Wait, did Manu retire? He ain't retired. Did he retire?
So the serious question, of course he retired.
Hey, no, of course. He played forever. I couldn't remember if he retired.
It's a big thing. That just goes to show how like low on the totem pole things are with the Spurs, that they could have a legend retired, we wouldn't know about
it. He should have retired like 3 years ago. That's why I couldn't remember.
Oh my gosh. All right, next one for you. Omer Asik.
Omer Asik. He's tall. I have no idea who he plays for, but I'm sure somebody's got a big dude in the league.
Incorrect. He is not in the league at
really?
This point. Yes, yes. He kind of bounced around a little bit, was with the Bulls. He got traded to the Pelicans.
Well, he signed a big money deal with the Pelicans.
Yeah, when they were trying to get somebody to start alongside AD, and that did not work out too well.
I tell you this, though. I imagine there was no less pleasant NBA experience than running into a screen from Omer Asik.
Yeah, it was a big, broad dude.
Yeah, and he looked like he didn't lift weights. It looked like he worked out, but not in the weight room. Like Highlander game stuff.
All right, last one for you. DJ Augustin.
DJ Augustin can't still be in the league. I'm going no.
Oh. I need to keep tallying on how many correct and incorrect. He plays for the Orlando Magic. He's still in the league.
Now, that's a great way for me to forget that you exist. Go play for the Orlando Magic. I almost forgot about Mo Bamba, like, as an entity. That song keeping him alive as long as he played for the Orlando Magic.
He's a rookie.
Yeah, but
he's
but once you go play for the Magic, you're gone. you be watching the Magic? Because I don't watch the Magic.
No, I do not watch the Magic. Even though I have League Pass, I'm not watching the Magic.
There it is.
All right, that'll do it for still in the league.
By the way, did you know Nick Collison getting a jersey retired?
Yeah, I saw that. Ooh, I mean, how do you feel if you're Kevin Durant and Nick Collison's getting his jersey retired before you?
Well, to be fair, Nick Collison has retired, right? Like, he's actually not playing anymore. And maybe they were just antsy. But I got two words. Fan favorite.
Yeah, but I mean, he retired like last year. Dude, I mean, it's not like he was a legend.
Fan favorite. He's a legend in their hearts.
Oh, my gosh. Trying to, you know, create some history there in OKC.
Never averaged double figures one time. He was a bench player for the overwhelming majority of his career, but they love him. That's how it works on these things. If they love you, they retire your jersey. And maybe they just wanted to hurry up and get somebody because they weren't going to have nobody till Russ retired. And then like 20 years from now, they retire Kevin Durant's jersey. They're still a little raw. But hey, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing here twice a week. My man Gabe Bassang handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank you to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Sam Biddle of The Intercept. Check out his story on Amazon and that camera they're selling and how people might be watching it. Also, thanks to Peter Holley of The Washington Post. Check out his story on the flying taxi prototype that was displayed at the CES show. That's at The Washington Post. And thank you to Hillary Hughes of Billboard. Check out her story on the Super Bowl halftime show at Billboard.com. Please remember to subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to think that you're a hater. Talk to you in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.